Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Even weasels tell the truth. They try not to. They try to weasel their way around it. They try to spin. They try to mealy mouth. Chuck Schumer, I'm talking about you. But they do tell the truth. As Maya Angelou said, people show you who they are. They tell you who they are. All you have to do is watch them. And we watched Charles Schumer on the steps of the Supreme Court inciting violence against Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch.
Inside the walls of this court, the Supreme Court is hearing arguments, as you know, for the first major abortion right cases since Justices Kavanaugh and Justices Gorsuch came to the bench. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price.
What does that tell us? It tells us what the Democratic left wants to do. Delegitimize the Supreme Court. Make this the issue of the election. Do they want the election to be about open borders and Medicaid for all immigrants here illegally or illegally? No. They don't want that. Do they want a discussion on sanctuary cities and the rule of law and states making up their own laws and deciding which ones to follow and which ones they won't? No, they don't want that. Abortion, abortion, abortion. Supreme Court, Supreme Court, Supreme Court. That'll be the issue. It's not going to be whether Joe Biden is competent. The issue's going to be about the Supreme Court. So thank you, Chuck Schumer, because that is the issue. And the question, if we lose the Supreme Court and the legitimacy, I'm not talking about we as a conservative, I'm talking about we as an American. If the Supreme Court loses legitimacy, what happens to all of us, liberals, conservatives, Democrats, Republicans? What happens to our republic? We descend into darkness. Warring tribes. Think about it. We'll talk about all this with Professor Emeritus Charlie Lipson of the University of Chicago and writer of Wall Street Journal and other fine publications and a friend of ours. And we'll talk about it with Jeannie Ives, former state rep who ran for governor, challenged her own Republican billionaire governor, and is now running for Congress. You know, I'm going to ask Jeannie Ives something. I've never asked for a favor, but I'm going to ask her. If she gets to Congress, I want a federal ban on all those salad bars in the stores. I mean, people sneeze on the lettuce and they touch the soup. They put their hands in and grab strawberries. This is coronavirus time. And if other journalists can politicize the coronavirus, can I? I've always hated those salad bars. Joining me, as always, is Jeff Carlin, my friend and executive producer of the Rokon Show on WGN. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and member of its editorial board. And where are you? Between Chuck Schumer screaming about violence against the Supreme Court and that guy at the food mart, you know, at the hot bar, drinking cream of broccoli soup out of the ladle and then putting it back after his lips were on it? I want his hands chopped off and his lips too. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Even weasels like Charles Schumer tell the truth inadvertently, with the idea that the Democrats are trying to delegitimize the Supreme Court and eventually lead us into a very dark and bad place. Our next guest has written on this and other subjects. Charles Lipson, professor emeritus at the University of Chicago. You can read his stuff in the Wall Street Journal, at Real Clear Politics, at many publications. He discusses in his most recent, if I'm not mistaken, Charles, A House Divided. Where's the cooperation? How does it stand? Is that the one that's the most recent?
It is, although I have one coming out actually on Chuck Schumer and this morning.
That's good. So we're competing, which is perfect. Competing for the eyes and ears and the anger of Twitter people. I had wanted to defend him, but, you know, like the way you would kind of defend a friend, I was just trying to show people that you could defend someone you vehemently disagree with, you know, like when a fellow, maybe someone you really don't like, but you're at a dinner party and they pass gas and you don't know what to do, so you just kind of ignore it.
I take it you've been to dinner parties with me.
Not with you, sir. I would love that. We've had breakfast several times, but and lunch, but not dinner parties. And it just seemed to me that he kept doubling and tripling down, sending out statements to attack the court again, attacking Justice Roberts again. It's really a bad thing that he's doing. It's reprehensible, and I just wonder what you think of it.
I completely agree. It's important to understand why it's a bad thing beyond threatening high public officials, which is always a bad thing, and then when it's on tape like this, to basically not tell the truth about what you said. He said it was a political, it was a statement about the political blowback. It didn't have anything to do with those people. He pointed at the court. He was standing right in front of the court. He named two justices by name. Remember, we had the second highest ranking Republican in the House of Representatives shot, almost killed, and other people were killed at a or were injured at a congressional baseball game a couple of years ago by a kind of crazed political supporter. These crazed supporters, I don't blame the politician they support, unless that politician is very busy making very inflammatory and deadly statements. And Chuck Schumer should have known better. He's a trained lawyer. But there's one bigger issue that's part of all of this, which is what the issue you pointed to, John, and that's the delegitimation of the court itself.
How does that? I mean, my argument is, as I said in the recent column, I was trying to, you know, trying to step away from it. I went to get coffee. A woman was talking to me about the cello that Frank Miller sold someone, and she saw it at a concert at Rockefeller Chapel, I think over on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just having a general conversation the way people do.
Right.
When they don't want to talk, when they're not talking politics, when they're not on Twitter hating each other,
mm-hmm.
and anonymously, and I thought, when the court, if the left and the Democrats get their way, much in the way years ago, the right was attacking the Supreme Court when Roosevelt was trying to stack it, I think that what will happen is based, I don't want to say war or chaos, but it seems like the Dark Ages to me, when there is no restraint on the warring tribes. We're in a bad place, Chuck. We're in a bad place, Mr. Schumer, and he's pushing us towards that.
I agree with that. I think that the Supreme Court is a big part of this battle. I mean, we saw it with what happened to the nomination of Justice Kavanaugh, which was just inexcusable. Remember, people now just remember the attacks, but the attacks came after all the hearings had been done and he was on his way to being confirmed. They had, Dianne Feinstein and others had known about this unverified claim against Kavanaugh, which could have been investigated quietly months before. They decided to turn this into a freak show, and they did it almost successfully in stopping Kavanaugh, but all of this is a shot across the bow. You mentioned the stacking of the Supreme Court in 1937. I learned that in school as a failure by Franklin Roosevelt. In the Constitution itself, there's no limit on the number of Supreme Court justices, right? And at times, long in the past, we didn't have nine, we had fewer. So he said to these justices who were making decisions against the New Deal, if you don't change what you're doing, we're going to add more justices of my choosing until we get the decisions we want. And I was always taught that was a failure.
So then,
but it wasn't. It intimidated the justices, and after that, they always decided in favor of the New Deal programs. A lot of the justices who had opposed him retired. He appointed his own, and there was no looking back.
So then that's when we had inexorably our push towards socialism in this country. But may I have, people should know that you've taught political theory and political history and political science for many years at the University of Chicago. And I'm just thinking from the historical perspective, looking now at the future, we have, as you've written before, we're facing economic upheaval in the new economy that's coming. People will be displaced by AI or whatever, however we're going to reduce it for the purpose of discussion. People will be out of jobs. There will be already chaos. And if the left turns the Supreme Court into a like a dead goat that the Afghanis play, you know, Bushgazi with on their horse on horseback, pulling it and beating each other over the head with it. What do we face as a nation?
Well, I think that it's a serious problem, and I would put it in the context of a deeply divided ideological country, where for the first time in a long time, we have ideological parties. The parties have always been the Democrats more to the left and the Republicans more to the right. But they're much more ideological now, with very little overlap between them. I mean, you saw you see that on a variety of issues. Finally, I would say that the courts are only a part of that larger battle between the two parties. They're also, there's very little left of public trust in institutions overall. This is not a left-right problem. It's that very few people trust institutions. Some people blame Trump for saying, talking about fake news, and that the issue, but there's no trust in the news media generally to present things in a fair and honest way. You're an opinion journalist. You're supposed to be doing opinions, John, but what about the front pages of newspapers? Those are not supposed to be opinions, and yet I think people see the New York Times, the Washington Post, the mainstream media in general as being far more opinionated than they used to be, the news as being less trustworthy in its presentation to them, and the courts, the delegitimation of the courts comes in that context. Who do you turn to for reliable, trustworthy news and opinions about these kinds of issues? Hardly anybody anymore.
And on our way in the elevator up here, John threw that out at me too, kind of brainstorming what we were going to tackle with you and how to get into things. And John lit the idea in my brain, which hadn't been there, which I commend him for. He does very well. I mean, reading the column and such, that's always been, you know, the draw for John. But the idea that we are, if that happens, if the Supreme Court is delegitimized, we are civil war. I mean, the civil war is next. And it seems like in a country where we've seen so many people in silos and echo chambers of their own ideals or theories or thoughts and feelings, it almost feels like we're always on the edge now. And that's, John said that, and I was like, holy crap, you're right. I mean, that is easily a spark that could send this tinderbox that is the discourse in this country aflame.
I think it's dangerous. I don't think we're on the edge of a civil war, but I think it's more like a Cold War, if you will, like our Cold War with the Soviet Union. That is, they're not actual fighting except on the periphery where Antifa comes into town or something like that. And it's not only at the national level. Think about being a Republican in California or in a Democratic city like Austin or Houston
or conservative Texas. In Chicago.
Right.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
These are people who are very isolated, and you're actually in Virginia, where the touchstone issues were abortion and guns. You're seeing some of the rural counties want to switch over and become part of West Virginia.
We are in a bad place, but I think that if I keep thinking of Robert Michael and the go along, get along congressmen mm-hmm. of the old days, that who were idealized by the left and by Democrats as compromisers. In other words, if they just went along, there would be no problem. And I see a strain of liberty breaking through all that noise. I'm not going to ascribe it to Trump. I would think that President Trump is a good marketer. And he saw where this was going, so he jumped on it. But this is the conflict, the big state, the big administrative state that the Democrats controlled for so long, and they see that they're losing control with all these judges that, you know, thank you, Harry Reid, and your nuclear option, President Obama, and all that. You've reaped what we sow now. And they're so terrified that the anger will only increase as these Kamalists and others, American Kamalists and others, try to hold on to power.
I think that's exactly right, John. There is a big fight going on. Trump is trying to roll back the inexorable move forward of centralization of power in Washington. It's movement into the bureaucracies and away from formal legislation. And a key part of that is judges who will say, to do what you're trying to do, EPA or Department of Education or whoever it is, you actually have to pass a law. You can't just let some mid-level bureaucrat rule our lives. I think that's a big fight. I think that it's a big Washington, and I think it's compounded by the fact that there are also fights about specific issues like guns and abortion and school choice and all the rest, and that's what we're fighting out in this election.
I can't let you go without asking you to assess the fall of Bloomberg. I just heard a bit on Dan Prof's show where he was running a tape of Brian Williams and the New York Times editorial board member, who they both announced as if it were fact that Bloomberg could have paid with $500 million, he could have paid $1 million to every voter and won. They can't even do back of the envelope math, because I don't think it comes to $1 million, but who cares? I mean, they just say what they want to say. But in general, now that Bloomberg is out, where do you see Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden?
First on Bloomberg, I think that Bloomberg's basic point was, aside from the fact that his personality was simply not ready for prime time in a big national debate, and he couldn't debate, was he was essentially running for city manager. That was his claim. We need a good manager. And you could just see that the Democratic electorate didn't want that. They want somebody who will take the fire to Donald Trump. On the other hand, they don't want that fire to be pure outright socialism nearing communism, because they know the American public won't buy it, thank heavens, and it will kill off all their down ballot candidates. I see Bernie's situation in real trouble now, and I look at the betting markets, and they're giving him almost no chance of winning. I've never seen a turnaround that swift and that decisive in politics. This morning, the betting markets have Joe Biden at an 86% chance of winning the primary, and Bernie at under 10%. I've just never seen anything like that within, 5 days.
Well, I guess then by spring, if he wins the nomination and the election, by spring of 20, after November, after winter, there's spring, then we could have President Amy Klobuchar.
Because of the 25th point.
Amendment.
This is an important point, because the issues about Biden in the past were always he's none too swift and he makes a lot of gaffes and he has bad judgment. All of those are true. But the issue about his gaffes now is whether he's whether there's some cognitive problem, and beyond that, whether he's really up to the job of being president. I've never seen that in a presidential leading presidential candidate of the parties before. I mean, the last time it would have happened would have been Franklin Roosevelt, for different reasons, in 1944, and we were in the middle of a war, and people just didn't want to change horses.
But the bosses, I'm sorry, the superdelegates, the Democratic bosses, really don't care if they win or lose. They want to keep control of the House. They want to keep control of the party. And if that means they're going to run a guy who is clearly, in my mind, losing it rapidly. I mean, that Jeff Carlin loves that quote about the Declaration of Independence that Biden was referring to as, that thing. It's just terrifying. Really, it is.
It is. And people are going to step back first people who'll do it, John, to ask, how did the Democratic Party end up in a situation where they had such a poor candidates? They had a lot to begin with, but I've got to say, it didn't look like the first team. It looked like the junior varsity. And I think a big part of the answer is that a lot of the mid-level, rising mid-level figures in the Democratic Party were defeated during the Obama years. He had zero coattails, and they really lost thousands of offices across the country, and a lot of those were kind of center-left candidates.
And I'd have to say that Obama made the mistake of making too many Hollywood friends and not enough political friends. I mean, that was kind of one of the things that you heard here in Chicago. He did nothing for anyone in politics really here. Obviously, his start was marred by the whole Blago saga, but at the same time, you're absolutely right. That was one of the takeaways that, you know, he didn't really do anything for the party other than be who he was for 8 years. There was no massive fundraising. There was a groundswell of, oh, this is the new Democratic Party. That stuff all just kind of fell apart, and he didn't do anything to help them.
He did, however, that is absolutely right, Jeff. He did, however, put in place the last missing building block of the FDR through LBJ program of building a larger centralized welfare state, and that was health care. And what I heard from Trump's appearance in a Fox Town Hall, which I thought Trump was remarkably candid and seemed quite at ease with talking to people, is that the Republicans are well aware that they have to come up with some solution on health care now, including one that covers pre-existing conditions. And it's hard to see in today's environment how they'll work that out or problem of DACA with a Democratic House of Representatives, and I'm sure that's going to be a major part of Trump's push in the general election. We need both the House and the Senate.
There was once a time when Americans said, live free or die, and now they say, from cradle to grave. From cradle to grave.
I think it's a big debate. I think it's a big debate because I think people want both. They, you remember the line a few years ago, keep the government's hands off my Medicare, you know,
right,
off my Social Security. Well, these are big government programs, and people want them. There's no thirst to turn those back. On the other hand, there is, I think, a thirst to stop the government from growing inexorably, especially into areas where its expertise is just not there. We can see how good they are at some core functions like the CDC and the NIH, but when we see them providing schools for Indians on reservations or the VA hospitals and so forth, we see that they don't always do things well.
Charles Lipson, writer, thinker, a man who should be at my next dinner party if I ever do find an apartment, which I'm still looking for. I'm in panic mode. Charles Lipson, University of Chicago, professor emeritus, writer of great thoughts in the Wall Street Journal, the Real Clear Politics, American Spectator, and other places. Thank you, Charles Lipson. It's been a pleasure.
John and Jeff, great to talk with you.
See you, sir.
Thank
Bye.
You, sir.
Bye, professor.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by God, you know the thing.
Our next guest is Jean Ives, a former state representative who ran for governor, Republican. She is now running for the United States Congress, so she can go to Congress and do battle with the likes of Chucky, Boss Schumer. you know, Chucky Schumer, the gangster. Gene Ives, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me back.
So, how have you been? Tell us about your life. What's going on?
Life is great in the Ives household. You know, five children. The first one got married about a month ago, so we're happy about that. He's my Navy pilot. The other one's up working on an oil refinery in Alaska, still loving the hunting and fishing up there. And the other three are doing really terrific as well.
What's he do? What's the work in on the oil refinery?
He does a little bit of engineering, but mostly project management.
So construction management, et cetera.
Absolutely, yep.
And he gets to fish and hunt.
Life
Below
it.
Zero. You ever watch that stuff on National Geographic? Life
no,
Below
but
Zero?
He was out bear hunting, and then I had to give him Alaska bear tails just to scare the hell out of him, so that he made sure that he was being safe at all times because it's a little bit scary out there.
I remember once going to Canada. Mm-hmm. We were on a fly-in. They dropped us 250 air miles northeast of Lac Seul. I'm sorry, Ear Falls, which is a 15-hour drive. And when we got there the first day, the bear hit the cabin. The second day, he hit the cabin. Third day, he hit the cabin. He kept hitting it and loud and more damage and more damage. He dropped a scat that was as big as a coffee table outside. And finally, we saw him. And he was literally 600 pounds. And we had, guess what I didn't have? I did not have a 12-gauge pump gun with rifle slugs. All I had were little sticks. I felt like an aborigine.
There, John, know. That does not work. Yeah, no, Matt had his own scary experience. He's a former Army Ranger.
Yeah.
And he and his buddy are walking along a trail. And they come up on a bear, literally from here to, like 20 yards away.
It's like half a second.
The bear's like a monster. He's like, it's got to be 1,200 pounds, Mom. He was, and of course, these rangers out there, they've got the rifle slung.
Yeah.
Right. And, the scope cap is on there too. It's like, what are you doing walking through the woods with bears around?
It's
unarmed.
A 38's not going to do it, Gene.
No.
I'm just saying. So, okay, let's get off the hunting of noble creatures and beasts, and let's get to politics in Illinois. Since you ran for governor, Bruce Rauner had done, I think, the unthinkable. I couldn't believe it. Supporting Sanctuary City, I told him it's not going to work. Sanctuary State, and then public abortion. Public funding of abortion. And of course, you felt you had no choice but to run against him. He's now not the governor, and J.B. Pritzker is the governor. What do you make of all that? What do you make of Illinois?
Well, it's interesting because when the Democrats get power, what do? They actually use their power. And so now you've got J.B. Pritzker, Democrat, and you've got Democrat supermajorities. And so last session, the things that they did would have been unthinkable if you didn't have that type of power. But they put through, 20 tax and fee hikes. They put in the most extreme abortion bill. So now it's no longer safe, legal, and rare. And we're going to just, basically keep that as the standard. Now it's full abortion all through 9 months and taxpayers fund it. That is not where the populace is. That's not what the majority of Americans do not believe in the third trimester abortion. And they don't believe that, we should pay for it, but they have gone full tilt extremist. But what's surprising is just the level of corruption that's come out. You've got the governor under still federal investigation for property tax fraud.
What? Wait a second. I keep forgetting. Wait a minute. No, we know that the FBI is on Madigan's guys. They're getting pulled in, but what are you talking about? I mean, I don't read about that. What are you saying?
Well, there's too much else to talk about, so we're not going to talk about stuff. But from the top down, they're under federal investigation. Alderman, state senator, investigation or indictment.
Pardon me, madam, congressman-to-be, but you said Pritzker's under investigation, and I think I remember something that he did some kind of property. What was it again?
Well,
that's where you do the, Jeff, the sound of the toilet
flushing. Yeah. On cue.
Right?
No, it's ridiculous. And the funny thing is, so now they let Blago out. Trump let Blago out.
Yeah.
And the Democrats are crying like, oh, you know, this is just not right. But the reason, think about this, the Democrats put Blagojevich in office. Then the Democrats took him out of office. And then the Democrats convicted him. And then the Democrats sentenced him to a very long sentence to send a message. And now,
I think Jim Ziegler, a Republican, had something to do with it.
Well, sure. But 8 years later, the Democrats have learned nothing because the state is still number one corruption. So was City of Chicago. They've learned nothing from their own sentencing of one of their own.
But what have the Republicans learned? Because I see all this miasma of ethics all over the place on the Democratic side. But I'm looking for Republican leadership to contrast and point out, and I don't see it. I mean, yes, I'm a lonely conservative in the sea of liberal media milk, and I've got a friend who has a talk show, but where's the Republican Party, Gene?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I think there are people down in Springfield, there are colleagues, there's quite a few Central Illinois conservatives, there's one out in the northwest corner of the state as well, and they are trying to raise these issues, but you know, you've got to be relentless about it, and you've got to act in one voice. And still, it was still Republicans who voted last year for an unbalanced budget mm-hmm. and a gas tax doubling of the gas tax and other fee hikes. And so they just kind of went along with it all instead of just really taking a hard stance. And if they don't come together and all vote as one voice against the nonsense, then we get nowhere. The Democrats know how to fall in line. The Republicans don't necessarily. They pretty much go along to get along.
Well, the Democrats certainly fell in line behind Joe Biden.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Yes.
As a former military officer, people should know, if you don't, that our guest Gene Ives is a West Point graduate and officer in the United States Army. The question of competence comes up. I remember hearing about it when the fever dream of the Democratic Party and the Never Trumpers was that we should use the 25th Amendment on Donald Trump. And of course, there were some people within the administration that hated him, right? Mm-hmm. The former Assistant Attorney General and others, the FBI, they talked about it. But I see Joe Biden deteriorating before my very eyes. He is not the man that he was just a few years ago when he was trying to electronically, can I use the word lynch, or at least that's what Justice Thomas said in the hearing. He's not that same man. None of us are. I'm not, you know, 18 years old and 156 pounds.
Right.
I know that.
Right.
But would you put him, I mean, as a former military officer, is that, have you ever had a commander who was losing it and you don't know what to do?
Not in the same way. I've had commanders in my past, honestly, that I think weren't committed to the mission. And in fact, they were, you know, going to grad school at the same time they were in command and then left 3 months in the middle of their command, which nobody does if you're dedicated to the mission. You don't give up your command to do that. So I've had that, but I've never seen that level of just inability to, string a sentence together, forget if it's your wife or your sister that's next to you on the stage, forget what day of the week it is. I mean, it's one after another with Joe Biden.
You know that thing?
It's funny.
That thing? We're all created men and women, that thing.
What? Oh, yeah. What thing?
What thing? The Declaration of Independence, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
right. Kind of a big deal.
No, right, kind of it's... Look, and that's really why I'm running, because you're right. The incompetence in government has got to stop. People are very sophisticated in their business life, in their personal life, in getting their kids educated, right? They make sophisticated decisions. They run really sharp operations all around the state. You know, they look at the bottom line, and then you have such incompetence in government in Illinois. At the federal level right now, which I do believe Trump is trying to clean up. He's trying to drain the swamp. We have to do that. But on the Democrat side, when you look at Pelosi's caucus, and by the way, the guy I'm running against, the Democrat, Sean Casten, has a 100% voting record with Nancy Pelosi. She represents San Francisco. He represents the middle of DuPage County and parts of Cook Lake, Kane, you know, and McHenry. And that is not the same as San Francisco. So to have a 100% voting record with your leader just shows that you're falling in line. But think about their policies. None of those speak to competence. None of them are real solutions for our healthcare affordability, for college affordability, for taking care of our budget, which is $23 trillion in debt. So they are incompetent at legislating and at governing. And anybody who thinks that they should vote for a Democrat in November of 2020 and lives in the state of Illinois really needs to think again.
And that's a great point, because we all see this. I mean, Illinois is in terrible shape top to bottom, and for lots of reasons, because of Democrat overlord rule. Casting back to that point, you know, voting with leadership there. Freshman, that's kind of, you know, what you do. You try to build power and at least get the ability to move your rank up the party. So if you go to Congress, I mean, who would you disagree with? I mean, there's a lot of people in Republican leadership that may not have the same objectives for their state that we would have or need in Illinois. Who do you see that you would maybe have to pair off from, maybe?
Well, look, I'm the one who took on the billionaire governor of my own party who could write an unlimited check. So I think my independence is pretty clear to the people if they're paying attention. But the idea that we're not going to control our budget, we're just going to vote willy-nilly for all sorts of stuff, that's where I disagree. And I think Trump probably wants to handle that in his second term. You need a majority in Congress on the Republican side to reinstitute budget caps and to control spending. And so I think that that's where he wants to go. But that's one area where I would have disagreed. I probably would have disagreed also on taking on our allies, our really core allies over tariffs. Right to go after the Chinese, absolutely had to do that. But I think our allies, you know, there's businesses that have suffered from that type of action. So I have my disagreements. And there's plenty of folks that just fall in with the whole green energy ideas too on our side of the aisle. And we're a coal, get natural gas, and really a nuclear state. And the idea that we're going to get rid of all of those energy sources in the next 12 to 20 years is just ridiculous.
I can't wait for Nancy Pelosi and Rahm Emanuel to get that ship with Greta. What's her name? That little Greta Thunberg. How dare you? You've taken my dreams. How dare you to fight you on that issue? What are the issues what are the things that you would like to do if you get to Congress? What are the things?
I think number one is we need to make those tax cuts that occurred in 2017 permanent. We need to give businesses the surety that they're going to be on this trajectory for a while, and so that they can have confidence in investing in America. So I think that's where we need to go for sure. And why is that? Because a growing economy gives everybody security and a secure feeling that they're going to have a job. And the reason that's important is because most Americans receive their health insurance through their employer. And that is the number one concern. What happens if I lose my job? How do I afford health care for my family, for myself? And so it's creating surety in the business environment so that you can have that. But it's also creating affordable and accessible health care. So those are the two things I'd like to work on. And we need to get to a competitive market. And by the way, there's really two reasons to run. One, to put these free market competitive ideas into practice. But number two, to really stop everything the Pelosi's caucus wants to do. You know, universal health care. Sean Casten has said that you're greedy. If you don't want to pay more taxes for universal health care. Now, Illinoinans have the highest tax burden per taxpayer.
It goes big in Downers Grove and DuPage, you know.
No, that does not go over big.
Right?
Not
no,
at all.
It doesn't?
But people don't
Aren't they all greedy
know.
Out there, according to
No, I know.
Ocasio-Cortez and all? I mean, that's who he's with, right?
That's exactly who he is. He has like a 94% voting record with AOC. So
how does that jive with
it really
DuPage County?
Doesn't. It really doesn't. So that's
all these
what's
Chicagoans
good.
Moving out that they've ruined the county, right?
Well, that is actually what's happening. There has been a demographic shift. People moving into the 6th congressional for better, better schools, safer streets, open space, and they're bringing the voting patterns with them. But you know, it's been run by conservative folks. Even Democrats in some of the towns are conservative. They understand budgets, and so they've got to change their tune.
And back to the healthcare thing, and this is one of the conversations we had earlier with our previous guests, the idea that it seems like Obamacare, as it's called or stands, is on its last legs. It
actually doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
It's no longer Obamacare. They've taken away so much of it, you cannot call it Obamacare anymore.
Right. And so, but what do you think we replace it with? Or at least to secure people with pre-existing conditions, stem the exorbitant cost of everything, mm-hmm. and deal with the pharmaceuticals that we're paying through the nose for no real reason other than they can.
Right. No, great question. So looking long term here, I mean, what you have to decide is, are you going to use free market solutions or do you want government control? That is the deal. Because if you believe the free market is the best way for getting lower prices and better care, then you're going to go with the free market. If you think the government should control it like the VA, then you're going to go with that system. I believe that in the end, we have to open up the markets and we're going to get better competition. That includes price transparency, includes equalizing people who have to buy on the individual market so that they can deduct all their premium costs just like an employer could. It includes incentivizing people to move into an HSA. It includes drug pricing transparency. It includes generics getting, you know, an easier route to coming onto the market. So all these things are solved through the marketplace. It includes, honestly, this is what's funny. In 2004, Blagojevich actually wanted to save money on drug prices. So he set up a program where Medicaid was buying from Canada.
Yeah.
Until they shut him down in the federal government. But this is what we should do. If you want to buy your drugs from Canada, then buy your drugs from Canada. Open up the market here.
And I know, the free market obviously is what you support. And do you feel though that there's any place for the government, at least in a punitive measure, to go after companies that jack up the price of something? Because to punitively damage a company for raising the price of gas for no reason. I mean, there are these rules against runs and trying to keep something like that happening. Do you feel there's any place in the government in enforcing at least an ethical feeling of why things should be priced a certain way?
Well, I think there's a place for them to ensure that people with pre-existing conditions have continuous coverage. I think that should absolutely be done. That's the right thing to do. But by the way, we had solved the pre-existing condition issue 23 years prior to Obamacare. When they put in HIPAA, they also put in high-risk pools and things for guaranteed insurance coverage for people who couldn't buy it on the individual marketplace. So we had covered that. It's those types of rules that the government should be involved in. And in terms of pricing, it's really, I think, the marketplace is the best place to solve some of that. But also freeing up some of the regulations on drug trials, things like that. Hey, let the doctors and the scientists decide there's a number of cases where a drug goes in to solve one issue. And in the aftermarket, the doctors decide it can actually solve this issue, and this issue. Right. Well, then just let them decide rather than going through all these trials and let the experts figure out. And I think that's really the best way to solve it, because price control is not the way to solve it. It kills innovation.
We can't let you go before asking two questions. And one is, we're in the middle of coronavirus panic, and everyone's freaking out.
Yeah.
And I remember what it was like with H1N1 virus when there were thousands of deaths. Obama didn't do anything about it, but it wasn't a big deal because no one was saying it was the Obama virus. Now we have the Trump virus, according to the New York Times. And I need you to do something if you get to Congress. Okay?
Okay.
This is a personal request.
Okay.
I want a federal ban. I hate this because I'm a conservative. I don't like federal anything. But a federal ban on hot bars and salad bars. Because somebody, you know, I saw that video of the guy sipping, you know, drinking out of the ladle. Yeah. Everyone's seen it.
Or how about Bloomberg picking up the pizza? And licking his hands.
Oh, yeah. You just see this, John?
Oh.
He bought pizza for one of his events, and he goes in, and he opens a lid, reaches in, two hands, pulls the crust off, puts the pizza back, eats the crust, and then licks every individual finger, and then goes and grabs some coffee.
Well, I've written a draft of a column where I want hand lopping off, but I think I'm going to get, the editors will freak out and think
it's very medieval of you.
But how... So Game of Thrones, but how about like a tongue, like a pile of hands and a tiny pile neatly of tongues would do it. But I don't, we're not in North Korea, so you can't do that, but I want a ban. Damn it. How could we even have, how could you have that?
Yeah.
You know?
I'll, you know what? I'll file that legislation for you and we'll see where it goes.
I don't have to do it as a as a citizen. But the, seriously though, although that is serious, I know it's stupid, but really it's obvious. Ban the damn things.
But right? Back to your point here, like, why are we name calling a virus? They name call everything, right? If you don't believe in a policy prescription, you're called a racist. If you, you know, everything's, you're a bigot. Fascist. It's just, you're a fascist.
Hitler.
Right? I know.
Right. So. But so that's how they play. But speaking of name callers, there, in a serious moment in the front of the Supreme Court, there was the leader of the Democratic leader of the United States Senate standing there screaming, threatening Associate Justice Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh if they don't go his way. You won't know what hit you, said Chucky Schumer. What happens when the Supreme Court, Jeannie Ives, when the Supreme Court is delegitimized? What happens in this country?
Well, then you create a lot of chaos and you create people starting to do things by their rules. And that doesn't serve anybody well. Look, we are a nation of law. We are not a nation of men making up laws. We are a nation of laws. And that is the number one thing that we have to think about, from border security to sanctuary state status, all this idea that you can just make up the law, or Kim Fox can just decide that larceny is, you know, at $1,000, not $300, like the law says. I mean, this willy-nilly stuff is just outrageous. But on the Schumer threat, look, I was there on the House floor when Stephanie Kifowit, the Democrat in the state legislature, wished death on Peter Breen, our House Republican speaker at that time. Not speaker, but he was given a speech on an issue. And she wished death on his family on the House floor. Over a policy disagreement. I mean, it's just the most outrageous thing. Now, I was the only one who stood up and defended Peter Breen, but everybody should have hammered Stephanie Kifowit, and it didn't happen.
Didn't Mike Madigan demand?
Didn't say a word.
He didn't stand up and say, how dare you?
Mm-mm, no.
No.
So when they can't get their way, they take on these extreme rhetoric that is just... It's terrible.
But they will, you know, you can see what they're doing to the last moderate Democrat, Dan Lipinski.
Mm-hmm.
They're destroying him. They're sending wave after wave of Marie Newman, the screaming, the people that want, you know, I want six abortions. That's wonderful. You know, people like that. I don't know where we're going. And I don't know where the Democratic Party's going. So they're going to get rid of everybody that offered diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to have diversity that they say, you know, by skin pigment and gender fluidity. But
yeah, identity politics have to go away. And look at their Democrat field now. Two old white guys. So.
And one of them is sane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Which one?
No, I think Bernie blew it when he went on 60 Minutes and started extolling the virtues of Fidel Castro and Khrushchev, you know. I mean, that kind of hurt them because they realized they weren't going to win Florida. And then that started rolling and the Democrats got in line. But now we have Biden.
Yes, and quid pro Joe has a lot of things to answer for.
Can you say come back kid in Ukrainian? I can't either.
I can't.
Gene Ives, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way.
Thank
Good
you
luck
for
in
having
your
me.
Campaign.
Terrific. Thanks.
And if people want to find out more and about your campaign and your policies and such, where should you send them?
So our website is full of good videos and policy statements and all sorts of questionnaires that we've filled out. So you can go to genieforcongress.com and find out more.
And that's GEANNE for Congress.
Correct.
Right.
Excellent. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Supermarket in Polar Peking. Bird nest soup, seaweed soup, noodle soup, poodle soup, talking crows with the croup, almost anything. If you want to buy a saw or fish, delicious when it's raw, a pill to kill your mother-in-law. to the supermarket. If you come on a goose, you can park it. So come to the supermarket and see.
You know, we'd really like to thank you, the listener, because without you, without readers, without listeners, there is no media. Just think of that. Well, we don't make any money here on the Chicago Way. This is done free and gratis, unfortunately. Fortunately for you, you don't have to pay. You get it free. Subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Write us a kick-ass review, and I promise you that I will, you know, I don't know, buy you a plate of Greek chicken, or at least I'll think about buying you a plate of Greek chicken, okay? That let's be clear on that. I'll think in kind terms about doing that. Write us a kick-ass review, because we just like doing this. For Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus, the University of Chicago, writer of books, writer of op-ed pieces in the Wall Street Journal, Real Clear Politics, Spectator, and on and on and on. And for Gene Ives, former Republican state representative who had the guts to stand up to her own governor and challenge him. She'd have the guts to stand up to Donald Trump, too, even though she is a Republican. And for my friend Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokan Show on WGN. And me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial page. Okay, you know what happened? In like 6 days now, I've got to find a new apartment, close on the house, move everything, get rid of my books. It's just, and write columns. I mean, stress? What stress? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN+.